His hand was still in my hair, and he forcibly turned my head so that I was face to face with him again.
"You didn't seem to mind. Everything can be just like it was before. Like it was in the cabin. You certainly wanted it then."
"The cabin?"
"No," I repeated. "I don't want that."
He pressed his lips against my cheek, and then made a surprisingly gentle trail of kisses down to my neck. Again, I felt my body's yearning for him, and I hated myself for the weakness.
"What about this?"
he asked, his voice barely a whisper.
"Do you want this?" "What?"
I felt it, the sharp bite of teeth into my skin as he closed his mouth down on my neck. For half an instant, it was agonizing, painful and horrible. And then, just like that, the pain disappeared. A rush of bliss and joy poured through me. It was so sweet. I had never felt so wonderful in my life. It reminded me a little of how it had been when Lissa drank from me. That had been amazing. But this was 10 times better. 100 times better. The rush from a Strigoi bite was greater than that of a Moroi's. It was like being in love for the first time, filled with that all-consuming joyous feeling. When he pulled away, it felt like all the happiness and wonder in the world had vanished. He ran a hand over his mouth, and I stared at him wide-eyed. My initial instinct was to ask why he'd stopped, but then, slowly, I reached inside myself to fight past the blissful days that his bite had sent me into.
"Why? What?"
My words slurred a little.
"You said it would be my choice." "It still is,"
he said. His own eyes were wide, his breathing heavy too. He'd been just as affected as me.
"I'm not doing this to awaken you, Rosa. A bite like this won't turn you. This, well, this is just for fun."
Then his mouth moved back to my neck to drink again, and I lost track of the world. Chapter 20. The days after that were like a dream. In fact, I honestly can't say how many days even passed. Maybe it was 1. Maybe it was 100. I lost track of day and night, too. My time was divided into Dimitri or not Dimitri. He was my world. When he wasn't there, the moments were agony. I'd pass them as best I could, but they seemed to drag on forever. The TV was my best friend during those times. I'd lie on the couch for hours, only half following what was going on. In keeping with the rest of the suite's luxury, I had access to satellite television, which meant we were actually pulling in some American programming. Half the time, though, I wasn't sure that it really made a difference to me if the language was Russian or English. Ina continued her periodic checks on me. She brought me my meals and did my laundry. I was wearing the dresses now, and waited around in that silent way of hers to see if I needed anything else. I never did. At least not from her. I only needed Dimitri. Each time she left, some distant part of me remembered I was supposed to do something. Follow her. That was it. I'd had some plan to check out the exit and use her as a way to escape. Right? Now that plan no longer held the appeal. Seemed like a lot of work. And then, finally, Dimitri would visit, and the monotony would be broken. We'd lie together on my bed, wrapped in each other's arms. We never had sex, but we'd kiss and touch and lose ourselves in the wonder of each other's bodies, sometimes with very little clothing. After a while, I found it hard to believe I'd once been afraid of his new appearance. Sure, the eyes were a bit shocking, but he was still gorgeous. Still unbelievably sexy. And after we'd talked and made out for a while, for hours sometimes, I'd let him bite me. Then I'd get that rush, that wonderful, exquisite flood of chemicals that lifted me from all my problems. Whatever doubts I'd had about God's existence vanished in those moments because surely, surely I was touching God when I lost myself in that bite. This was heaven.
"Let me see your neck," he said one day.
We were lying together as usual. I was on my side and he was snuggled up against my back, one arm draped around my waist.
I rolled over and brushed my hair away from where it had fallen over my neck and cleavage. The dress I wore today was a navy halter sundress, made of some light, clingy material. "All ready?" I asked. He usually didn't bite me until the end of his visits. While part of me longed for that and waited in anticipation to feel that high again, I did kind of enjoy these moments beforehand. It was when the endorphins in my system were at their lowest, so I was able to manage some sort of conversation. We would talk about fights we'd been in, or the life he imagined for us when I was Dragoi. Nothing too sentimental, but nice nonetheless. I braced myself for the bite now, arching up in anticipation. To my surprise, he didn't lean down and sink his teeth into me. He reached into his pocket and produced a necklace. It was either white gold or platinum, I didn't have the skill to tell which, and had three dark blue sapphires the size of quarters. He'd brought me a lot of jewelry this week, and I swore each piece was more beautiful than the last. I stared in amazement at its beauty, at the way the blue stones glittered in the light. He placed the necklace against my skin and fastened it behind my neck. Running his fingers along the necklace's edges, he nodded in approval. "Beautiful." His fingers drifted to one of the dress's straps. He slid his hand underneath it, sending a thrill through my skin.
"It matches."
I smiled. In the old days, Dimitri had almost never gotten me gifts. He hadn't had the means, and I hadn't wanted them anyway. Now, I was continually dazzled by the presents he seemed to have at each visit. "Where'd you get it?" I asked. The metal was cool against my flushed skin, but nowhere near as cold as his fingers. He smiled slyly.
"I have my sources."
That chastising voice in my head, that sometimes managed to penetrate through the haze I lived in, noted that I was involved with some sort of vampire gangster. Its warnings were immediately squashed and sank back down into my dreamy cloud of existence. How could I be upset when the necklace was so beautiful? Something suddenly struck me as funny. "You're just like Abe."
"Who?"
"This guy I met, Abe Mazur. He's some kind of mob boss. He kept following me." Dimitri stiffened.
"Abe Mazur was following you?"
I didn't like the dark look that had suddenly fallen over his features.
"Yeah,
so?"
"Why? What did he want with you?"
"I don't know. He kept wanting to know why I was in Russia, but finally gave up and just wanted me to leave. I think somebody from home hired him to find me."
"I don't want you near Abe Mazur. He's dangerous."
Dimitri was angry, and I hated that. A moment later, that fury faded, and he ran his fingers along my arm once more, pushing the strap down further.
"Of course, people like that won't be an issue when you awaken."
Somewhere in the back of my head, I wondered if Dimitri had the answers I wanted about Abe, about what Abe did. But talking about Abe had made Dimitri upset, and I cringed at that, hastily wanting to switch topics. "What have you been doing today?" I asked, impressed at my ability to make normal small talk. Between the endorphins and him touching me, coherence was difficult.
"Errands for Galina. Dinner."
Dinner. A victim. I frowned. The feelings that inspired in me weren't of repulsion so much as jealousy. "Do you drink from them? For fun?" He ran his lips along my neck, teeth taunting my skin but not biting. I gasped and pressed closer to him.
"No, Rosa. They're food. That's all. It's over quickly. You're the only one I take pleasure in."
I felt smug satisfaction in that, and that annoying mental voice pointed out that that was an incredibly sick and twisted view for me to have. I kind of hoped he would bite me soon. That usually shut the rational voice up. I reached up and touched his face, then ran my hand through that wonderful silky hair that I'd always loved. "You keep wanting to awaken me, but we won't be able to do this anymore. Dragoi don't drink from each other, do they?"
"No," he agreed. "But it'll be worth it. We can do so much more."
He left the "so much more" to my imagination, and a pleasant shiver ran through me. The kissing and blood-taking were intoxicating, but there were some days that I did want, well, more. The memories of the one time we'd made love haunted me when we were this close together, and I often longed to do it again. For whatever reason, he never pushed for sex, no matter how passionate things became. I wasn't sure if he was using that as a lure for me to turn, or if there was some incompatibility between a Strigoi and a Dampier. Could the living and the dead do that? Once I would have found the thought of sex with one of them absolutely repulsive. Now, I just didn't think about the complications so much. But although he didn't attempt sex, he would often taunt me with his caresses, touching my thighs and sternum and other dangerous places. Plus, he would remind me of what it had been like that one time, how amazing it had been, how our bodies had felt. His talk of such things was more taunting than affectionate, though. In my semi-clear moments, I honestly thought it was strange that I hadn't yet consented to becoming Strigoi. The endorphin fog made me agree to almost everything else he wanted. I'd fallen comfortably into dressing up for him, staying in my gilded prison, and accepting that he took a victim every couple days. Yet even in my most incoherent moments, even when I wanted him so badly, I couldn't agree to turning. There was some intrinsic part of me that refused to budge. Most of the time, he would shrug off my refusal, like it was a joke. But every once in a while when I declined, I'd see a spark of anger in his eyes. Those moments scared me. "Here it comes," I teased. "The sales pitch, eternal life, invincible, nothing to stand in our way."
"It's not a joke," he said.
Oops. My flippancy had brought that hardness back to him. The desire and fondness that I had just seen now fractured into a million pieces and blew away. The hands that had just stroked me suddenly grabbed my wrists and held me in place as he leaned down.
"We can't stay like these forever. You can't stay here forever."
"Whoa," that voice said. "Be careful. That doesn't sound good." His grip hurt, and I often wondered if that was his intent or if he just couldn't help his violence. When he finally released me, I wrapped my arm around his neck and tried to kiss him. "Can't we talk about that later?" Our lips met, fire blossoming between us and urgency coursing through my body. I could tell he had a matching desire, but a few seconds later, he broke away. The cold annoyance was still on his face.
"Come on," he said, pulling away from me. "Let's go."
He stood up, and I stared stupidly. "Where are we going?"
"Outside."
I sat up on the bed, dumbfounded. "Out? Outside? But that's not allowed. We can't."
"We can do anything I want," he snapped.
He extended his hand and helped me up. I followed him to the door. He was as skilled as Ina at blocking me from the keypad. Not that it mattered now. There was no way I could ever remember that long of a sequence anymore. The door clicked open, and he led me out. I stared in wonder, my dazed brain still trying to process this freedom. As I'd noticed that one day, the door led to a short corridor blocked by another door. It too was heavy and bore a keypad lock. Dimitri opened it, and I was willing to bet the two doors had different codes. Taking my arm, he guided me through that door and into another hallway. Despite his firm hold, I couldn't help but come to a standstill. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised at the opulence I suddenly faced. After all, I was living in this place's penthouse suite. But the corridor leading out of my room had been stark and industrial-looking, and somehow I'd imagined the rest of the house to be equally institutional or prison-like. It wasn't. Instead, I felt like I was in some old movie, the kind where people took tea in the parlor. The plush carpet was covered by a gold-patterned runner that stretched off in both directions of the hall. Antique-looking paintings dotted the walls, showing people from ages ago in elaborate clothing that made my dresses look cheap and ordinary. The whole place was illuminated by tiny chandeliers that were spaced along the ceiling every 6 feet or so. The teardrop-shaped crystals caught the light with their facets, scattering small flecks of rainbows on the walls. I stared, enchanted by the glitter and the color, which is probably why I failed to notice one other fixture in the hall.
"What are you doing?"
The harsh sound of Nathan's voice jerked me from my crystal gazing. He'd been leaning against the wall opposite my door and straightened immediately upon seeing us. He had that same cool expression on his face that was so characteristic of Strigoi, the one I occasionally saw in Dmitri, no matter how charming and kind he seemed sometimes. Dmitri's posture turned rigid and defensive.
"I'm taking her for a walk."
He kind of sounded like he was talking about a dog, but my fear of Nathan trumped any offense I might take.
"That's against the rules," said Nathan. "Bad enough you've still got her here. Galena gave orders for you to keep her confined. We don't need any rogue Dampier running around."
Dmitri nodded toward me.
"Does she look like she's a threat?"
Nathan's eyes flicked over me. I wasn't entirely sure what he saw. I didn't think I looked that different, but a small smirk crossed his lips that promptly disappeared when he turned back to Dmitri.
"No, but I was ordered to babysit this door, and I'm not going to get in trouble for you taking a field trip."
"I'll deal with Galena. I'll tell her I overpowered you."
Dmitri gave a fang-filled grin.
"It shouldn't be that hard for her to believe."
The look Nathan gave Dmitri made me unconsciously step back until I hit the wall.
"You're so full of yourself. I didn't awaken you so that you could act like you're in charge around here. I did it so that we could use your strength and inside knowledge. You should be answering to me."
Dmitri shrugged. Taking my hand, he started to turn away.
"Not my fault if you're not strong enough to make me do it."
That was when Nathan lunged at Dmitri. Dmitri responded so quickly to the attack that I think he knew it would happen. He instantly released my hand, turned to catch hold of Nathan, and tossed the other Strigoi against the wall. Nathan immediately got up. It took more than that kind of hit to face someone like him. But Dmitri was ready. He punched Nathan in the nose. Once, twice, and then a third time, all in rapid succession. Nathan fell down, blood covering his face. Dmitri kicked him hard in the stomach and loomed over him.
"Don't try it," said Dmitri. "You'll lose."
He wiped Nathan's blood off his hand and then laced his fingers through mine again.
"I told you, I'll deal with Galena. But thanks for your concern."
Dmitri turned away again, apparently feeling there'd be no more attacks. There weren't. But as I started to follow him, I cast a quick glance over my shoulder to where Nathan sat on the floor. His eyes shot daggers at Dmitri, and I was pretty sure I'd never seen a look of such pure hatred, at least until he turned his gaze on me. I felt cold all over and stumbled to keep up with Dmitri. Nathan's voice rang out behind us.
"You're not safe! Neither of you is! She's lunch, Belikov! Lunch!"
Dmitri's hand tightened on mine, and he picked up the pace. I could feel the fury radiating off of him, and suddenly wasn't sure whom I should be more afraid of, Nathan or Dmitri. Dmitri was a badass, alive or undead. In the past, I'd seen him attack foes without fear or hesitation. He'd always been magnificent, behaving just as bravely as I'd told his family. But in all those times, he'd always had a legitimate reason for fighting, usually self-defense. His confrontation with Nathan just then had been about more, though. It had been an assertion of dominance and a chance to draw blood. Dmitri had seemed to enjoy it. What if he decided to turn on me like that? What if my constant refusal pushed him into torture and he hurt me until I finally agreed? "Nathan scares me," I said, not wanting Dmitri to know that I feared him too. I felt weak and utterly defenseless, something that didn't happen to me very often. Usually I was ready to take on any challenge, no matter how desperate.
"He won't touch you," Dmitri said harshly. "You have nothing to worry about."
We reached a set of stairs. After a few steps, it became clear that I wasn't going to be able to handle four flights. Aside from the drug stupor his bites kept me in, the frequent blood loss was weakening me and taking its toll. Without saying a word, Dmitri swept me up in his arms and carried me downstairs effortlessly, gently setting me down when we reached the staircase's bottom. The main floor of the estate had the same grand feel as the upstairs hall. The entryway had a huge vaulted ceiling with an elaborate chandelier that dwarfed the little ones I'd seen. Ornate double doors faced us, set with stained glass windows.
What also faced us was another Strigoi, a man sitting in a chair and apparently on guard duty.
Near him was a panel set into the wall with buttons and flashing lights. a modern security system set amongst all this old-world charm. His posture stiffened as we approached, and at first, I thought it was a natural bodyguard instinct, until I saw his face. It was the Strigoi I'd tortured that first night in Novosibirsk, the one I dispatched to tell Dmitri I was looking for him. His lips curled back slightly as he met my eyes.
"Rose Hathaway," said the Strigoi. "I remember your name, just like you told me."
He said no more than that, but I tightened my grip on Dmitri's hand as we passed. The Strigoi's eyes never left me until we'd stepped outside and shut the door behind us. "He wants to kill me," I told Dmitri.
"All Strigoi want to kill you,"
Dmitri returned. "He really does. I tortured him."
"I know. He's been in disgrace ever since then and lost some of his status here."
That doesn't make me feel any better. Dmitri seemed unconcerned.
"Marlin is no one you need to worry about. You fighting him only proved to Galina that you're a good addition around here. He's beneath you."
I didn't find that overly reassuring. I was making too many personal Strigoi enemies. But then, it wasn't like I could really expect me making Strigoi friends. It was nighttime, of course. Dmitri wouldn't have taken me out otherwise. The foyer had made me think we were at the front of the house, but the extensive gardens that spread out around us made me wonder if we were in the back now. Or maybe the entire house was wrapped in this kind of greenery. We were surrounded in a hedge maze cut with beautiful detail. Within the maze were small courtyards decorated with fountains or statues, and everywhere were flowers and more flowers. The air was heavy with their scent, and I realized that someone had gone to an awful lot of trouble to find night-blooming ones. The only type I immediately recognized was jasmine, its long, white-flowered vines climbing up trellises and statues in the maze. We walked in silence for a bit, and I found myself lost in the romance of it all. The whole time Dmitri and I had been together at school, I'd been consumed with the fears of how we would juggle our relationship and our duty. A moment like this, walking in a garden on a spring night lit with stars, had seemed like a fantasy too crazy to even start to consider. Even without the difficulty of stairs, too much walking grew exhausting in my state. I came to a halt and sighed. "I'm tired," I said. Dmitri stopped too and helped me sit down. The grass was dry and tickly against my skin. I lay back against it, and a moment later, he joined me. I had an eerie moment of déjà vu, recalling the afternoon we'd made snow angels. "This is amazing," I said, staring up at the sky. It was clear, no clouds in sight. "What's it like for you?" "There's enough light that I can see pretty clearly, but it's still dim compared to day. Your eyes are better than mine. What do you see?"
"For me, it's as bright as day."
When I didn't respond, he added,
"It could be like that for you too."
I tried to picture that. Would the shadows seem as mysterious? Would the moon and stars shine so brightly? I don't know. I kind of like the darkness.
"Only because you don't know any better,"
I sighed. "So you keep telling me." He turned toward me and pushed the hair away from my face.
"Rose, this is driving me crazy. I'm tired of this waiting. I want us to be together. Don't you like this? What we have? It could be even better."
His words sounded romantic, but not the tone. I did like this. I loved the haze I lived in, the haze in which all worries disappeared. I loved being close to him, loved the way he kissed me and told me he wanted me. "Why?" I asked.
"Why what?"
He sounded puzzled, something I hadn't heard yet in a Strigoi. "Why do you want me?" I had no idea why I even asked that. He apparently didn't know either.
"Why wouldn't I want you?"
He spoke in such an obvious way, like it was the stupidest question in the world. It probably was, I realized. And yet, I'd somehow been expecting another answer. Just then, my stomach twisted. With all the time I'd spent with Dimitri, I really had managed to push the Strigoi nausea off my radar. The presence of other Strigoi increased it, though. I'd felt it around Nathan, and I felt it now. I sat up, and Dimitri did too, almost at the same time. He'd likely been alerted by his superior hearing. A dark shape loomed over us, blotting out the stars. It was a woman, and Dimitri shot up. I stayed where I was, on the ground. She was strikingly beautiful, in a hard and terrible way. Her build was similar to mine, indicating she hadn't been a Moroi when turned. Isaiah, the Strigoi who'd captured me, had been very old, and power had radiated from him. This woman hadn't been around nearly so long, but I could sense that she was older than Dimitri, and much stronger. She said something in Russian to him, and her voice was as cold as her beauty. Dimitri answered back, his tone confident, yet polite. I heard Nathan's name mentioned a couple of times as they spoke. Dimitri reached down and helped me up, and I felt embarrassed at how often I needed his assistance, when I used to almost be a match for him.
"Rose," he said, "this is Galina. She's the one who has been kind enough to let you stay."
Galina's face didn't look so kind. It was devoid of all emotion, and I felt like my entire soul was exposed to her. While I was uncertain of a lot of things around here, I'd picked up enough to realize that my continual residence here was a rare and fragile thing. I swallowed.
"Spasibo," I said.
I didn't know how to tell her it was nice to meet her, and honestly, I wasn't sure if it was. But I figured a simple thank you was good enough. If she'd been his former instructor and trained at a normal academy, she probably knew English and was faking it like Yeva. I had no clue why she'd do that, but if you could snap a teen Dompier's neck, you were entitled to do whatever you wanted. Galina's expression, or lack thereof, didn't change with my thanks, and she turned her attention back to Dimitri. They conversed over me, and Dimitri gestured to me a couple of times. I recognized the word for strong. Finally, Galina issued something that sounded final and left us without any sort of goodbye. Neither Dimitri nor I moved until I felt the nausea dissipate.
"Come on," he said. "We should get back."
We walked back through the maze, though I had no idea how he knew where to go. It was funny. When I'd first arrived, my dream had been to get outside and escape. Now that I was here, well, it didn't seem that important. Galina's anger did.
"What did she say?" I asked. "She doesn't like that you're still here. She wants me to awaken you. Or kill you."
"Oh. What are you gonna do?" He stayed silent for a few seconds.
"I'll wait a little longer. And then, I will make the choice for you."
He didn't specify which choice he'd be making, and I almost began my earlier pleas to die before becoming Strigoi. But suddenly instead, I said, "How long?"
"Not long, Rosa. You'll need to choose. And make the right choice."
"Which is?" He held up his hands.
"All of this. A life together."
We'd emerged from the maze. I stared at the house, which was crazy enormous when viewed from the outside, and at the beautiful gardens around us. It was like something from a dream. Beyond that, endless countryside rolled away, eventually becoming lost in the darkness and blending into the black sky, except for one tiny part that had a soft purple glow on the horizon. I frowned, studying it, then turned my attention back to Dimitri.
"And what then? Then I work for Galina too?" "For a while."
"How long is a while?" We came to a stop outside the house. Dimitri looked down into my eyes, his face alight with a look that made me take a step back.
"Until we kill her, Rose. Until we kill her and take all of this for ourselves."
Chapter 21. Dimitri didn't elaborate. I was too startled by his words and the rest of the night's events to even know how to begin to address them. He took me back inside, past the Strigoi on guard duty, and upstairs to my suite. Nathan was no longer outside. For a few brief moments, that nagging voice in my head spoke loudly enough to break through my addled thoughts. If I had no guard in the hall, and Ina returned soon, I had a very good chance of threatening her enough to get out of here. Admittedly, that would mean I'd have to deal with a house of God only knew how many Strigoi, but my escape odds were better in the house than in this room. Then almost as soon as those thoughts appeared, they vanished. Dimitri snaked his arm around me and pulled me to him. It had been chilly outside, and even if his body was cold, his clothes and jacket provided some warmth. I snuggled closer to him as his hands ran all over me. I thought he was going to bite me, but it was our mouths that met, hard and furious. I wrapped my fingers in his hair, trying to pull him closer to me. Meanwhile, his fingers were running against my bare leg, pushing my skirt up almost to my hip. Anticipation and eagerness lit every part of my body. I had dreamed about the cabin for so long, remembering it with so much longing. I'd never expected anything like that to happen again, but now it could, and I was astonished at how badly I wanted it. My hands moved down to his shirt, undoing all the buttons so that I could touch his chest. His skin still felt like ice, a startling contrast to the burning within me. He moved his lips from mine, down to my neck and shoulder, pushing down the dress's strap as he covered my flesh with hungry kisses. His hand was still on the side of my bare hip, and I frantically tried to pull his shirt off altogether. Suddenly, with a surprising abruptness, he jerked away and shoved me down. At first, I thought it was just more of the foreplay between us, until I realized he was purposely pushing me away.
"No," he said, voice hard. "Not yet. Not until you're awakened."
"Why?" I asked desperately. I couldn't think of anything except him touching me, and, well, another bite. "Why does it matter? Is there a reason we can't?" Until I'd come here, sex with a Strigoi had never occurred to me. Maybe it just wasn't possible. He leaned toward me, putting his lips near my ear.
"No, but it'll be so much better if you're awakened. Let me do it. Let me do it, and then we can do anything we want."
It was a bargaining chip, I realized vaguely. He wanted me. It was written all over him. But he was using the lure of sex to get me to give in. And honestly, I was this close to accepting. My body was overriding my mind, nearly. "No," I whimpered. I'm scared." That dangerous look softened, and while he didn't exactly look like the Dimitri from before, there was something a little less Strigoi about him.
"Rose, do you think I'd do anything that would hurt you?"
Somewhere, hadn't there been a discussion about how my options were to turn or die? The latter seemed like it might hurt, but I didn't mention that just now. "The bite. The turning would hurt."
"I told you. It'll be just like what we've already done. You'll enjoy it. It won't hurt. I swear it."
I looked away. Damn it. Why couldn't he still be sinister and scary? It was so much easier to put my foot down and resist. Even in the heat of passion, I was able to resist. But somehow, seeing him like this, calm and reasonable, well, it was too close to the Dimitri I'd loved. And that was hard to turn away from. For the first time, it made turning Strigoi seem not so bad. "I don't know," I said lamely. He released me and sat up, frustration filling his features. It was almost a relief.
"Galena's patience is running out. So is mine."
"You said we still have time. I just need to think more." How long could I use that excuse? The narrowing of his eyes told me not much longer.
"I have to go,"
he said harshly. There would be no more touching or kissing, I could tell.
"I need to deal with some things."
"I'm sorry," I said, both confused and afraid. I didn't know which Dimitri I wanted. The terrifying one, the sensual one, or the almost, but still not quite, gentle one. He said nothing. Without any other warning, he leaned down and bit into the tender skin of my throat. Whatever feeble escape strategies I had were gone. I closed my eyes, nearly falling over, and only his arm wrapped firmly around me kept me upright. Just like when we kissed, his mouth was warm against my flesh, and the feel of his tongue and teeth sent electricity through me. And like that, it was over. He pulled away, licking his lips as he still continued to hold on to me. The fog was back. The world was wonderful and happy, and I was without any cares. Whatever he'd been worrying about with Nathan and Galena meant nothing to me. The fear I'd felt moments ago, my disappointment over sex, my confusion. I didn't have time to worry about any of that. Not when life was so beautiful and I loved Dimitri so much. I smiled up at him and tried to hug him again, but he was already leading me to the couch.
I'll see you later.
In a flash, he was at the door, which saddened me. I wanted him to stay. Stay forever.
Remember, I want you. And I would never let anything bad happen to you. I'll protect you. But I can't wait much longer.
With that, he left. His words made me smile more broadly. Dimitri wanted me. Vaguely, I recalled asking him outside why he wanted me. Why on earth had I asked? What answer had I wanted? Why did it matter? He wanted me. That was what counted. That thought and the wonderful endorphin rush enveloped me as I lay on the couch, and I felt drowsiness overtaking me. Walking over to the bed seemed like too much work, so I stayed where I was and just let sleep come. And, unexpectedly, I found myself in one of Adrian's dreams. I'd pretty much given up on him. After my first desperate attempts at escape in the suite, I'd finally convinced myself that Adrian wasn't coming back, that I'd send him away for good. Yet, here he was, standing right in front of me. Or, well, at least his dream version was. Often we were in the woods, or a garden. But today we stood where we'd first met, on the porch of an Idaho ski lodge. Sun shone down and mountains soared off to the side of us. I grinned broadly. Adrian! I didn't think I'd ever seen him look as surprised as he did just then, considering how mean I usually was to him. I could understand his feelings.
Hello, Rose, he said.
His voice sounded uncertain, like he was worried I might be playing a trick on him. You look good today, I told him. It was true. He wore dark jeans and a printed button-down shirt in shades of navy and turquoise that looked fantastic with his dark green eyes. Those eyes, however, looked weary, worn. That was a little odd. In these dreams, he could shape the world and even our appearances to what he wanted, with only a little effort. He could have looked perfect, but instead appeared to be reflecting real-world fatigue.
So do you.
His voice was still wary, as he eyed me from head to toe. I was still in the clingy sundress, my hair down and loose, the sapphires around my neck.
That looks like something I'd normally dress you in. Are you asleep in that?
Yep. I smoothed down the dress's skirt, thinking how pretty it looked. I wondered if Dimitri had liked it. He hadn't said so specifically, but he had kept telling me I was beautiful. I didn't think you'd come back.
I didn't think I would either.
I looked back up at him. He wasn't like his usual self at all. Are you trying to figure out where I am again?
No, I don't care about that anymore, he sighed. The only thing I care about is that you aren't here. You have to come back, Rose.
I crossed my arms and flounced under the porch's railing. Adrian, I'm not ready for anything romantic.
Not for me, he exclaimed. For her. You have to come back for Lyssa, that's why I'm here.
Lyssa. My waking self was pumped full of endorphins, and carried over here. I tried to remember why I should be so worried about Lyssa. Adrian took a step forward and studied me carefully.
Yeah, you know Lyssa, your best friend, the one you're bonded to and sworn to protect.
I swung my legs back and forth. I never made any vows.
What the hell's the matter with you?
I didn't like his agitated tone. It was ruining my good mood.
What's the matter with you?
You aren't acting like yourself. Your aura.
He frowned, unable to continue. I laughed.
Oh, yes. Here it comes. The magical, mystical aura. Let me guess, it's black, right?
No. It...
He continued scrutinizing me for several heavy seconds. I can barely get a fix on it.
It's all over the place.
What's going on, Rose? What's happening in the waking world?
Nothing's happening, I said. Nothing except me being happy for the first time in my life. Why are you acting weird all of a sudden? You used to be fun. Figures the first time I'm finally having a good time, you go all boring and strange.
He knelt down in front of me, no trace of humor anywhere.
There's something wrong with you. I can't tell what.
I told you I'm fine. Why do you have to keep coming and trying to ruin things for me?
True, I'd desperately wanted him to come a little while ago, but now, well, that wasn't so important. I had a good thing with Dimitri here. If only I could figure out how to solve all the not-so-good parts.
I told you, I'm not here for me, I'm here for Lyssa.
He looked up at me, wide-eyed and earnest.
Rose, I am begging you to come home. Lyssa needs you. I don't know what's wrong, and I don't know how to help her. No one else does either. I think only you can.
Maybe being apart is what's hurting her.
Maybe that's what's wrong with you now. Why you're acting so weird.
Come home, please. We'll heal both of you. We'll all figure it out together.
She's acting so strange. She's reckless and doesn't care about anything.
I shook my head. Being away isn't what's wrong with me. Probably not what's wrong with her either. If she's really worried about Spirit, she should go back on her meds.
She's not worried. That's the problem, damn it!
He stood up and began pacing.
What's wrong with you two? Why can't either of you see there's something the matter?
Maybe it's not us, I said. Maybe it's you imagining things. Adrian turned back toward me and looked me over again.
No, it's not me.
I didn't like any of this. Not his tone, expression, or words. I'd been excited to see him, but now I resented him ruining my good mood. I didn't want to think about any of this. It was too hard.
Look, I said. I was happy to see you tonight, but not anymore. Not if you're going to sit and accuse me and make demands.
I'm not trying to do that.
His voice was gentle. The anger was gone.
The last thing I want is to make you unhappy. I care about you. I care about Lyssa, too. I want you both to be happy and live your lives like you want. But not when you're both heading down destructive paths.
He almost made sense. Almost seemed reasonable and sincere. I shook my head.
Stay out of it. I'm where I want to be, and I'm not coming back.
Lyssa's on her own. I jumped off the rail. The world swirled a little and I stumbled. Adrian caught my hand and I jerked away.
I'm fine. You are not! Jesus Christ! I'd swear you're drunk, except...
The aura's still not right for that.
What is it?
He ran his hands through his dark hair. It was his typical sign of agitation.
I'm done here,
I said, trying to be as polite as possible.
Why on earth had I wanted to see him again? It had seemed so important when I first arrived.
Send me back, please. He opened his mouth to say something, then froze a few moments.
What's on your neck?
He reached forward, and addled or no, I managed to dodge pretty efficiently. I had no idea what he saw on my neck, and I had no interest in finding out. Don't touch me.
Rose, that looks like...
Send me back, Adrian. So much for my politeness.
Rose, let me help.
Send me back. I shouted the words, and then, for the first time, I managed to pull myself out of Adrian's dream. I left sleep altogether and woke up on the couch. The room was still and silent, the only sound my rapid breathing. I felt all tangled up inside. Usually, so fresh from a bite, I would be floating and gleeful. Yet, the encounter with Adrian had left part of me troubled and sad. Standing up, I managed to make my way to the bathroom. I flicked on the light and winced. It hadn't been very bright in the other room. Once my eyes adjusted, I leaned toward the mirror and pushed my hair out of the way. I gasped at what I saw. There were bruises all over my neck, as well as signs of fresher wounds. Around where Dimitri had just bitten me, I could see dried blood. I looked like a blood whore. How had I never noticed this before? I wet a washcloth and scrubbed at my neck, trying to get the blood off. I rubbed and rubbed until the skin turned pink. Was that it? Were there more? That looked like the worst of it. I wondered how much Adrian had seen. My hair had been down, and I was pretty sure most of it had covered my neck. A rebellious thought came to my head. What did it matter if Adrian saw or not? He didn't understand. There was no way he could even come close. I was with Dimitri. Yeah, he was different, but not that much different. And I was sure I could find a way to make this work without becoming a Strigoi. I just didn't know how yet. I tried to reassure myself over and over, but those bruises kept staring back at me. I left the bathroom and returned to the couch. I turned on the TV without really watching, and after a while, the happy fog rolled over me again. I soon tuned out the TV and returned to sleep. This time, my dreams were my own. It took a while for Dimitri to come again, and by a while, I mean almost an entire day. I was getting twitchy by that point, both because I missed him and because I missed the bite. He usually visited twice a day, so this was the longest I'd gone without the endorphins. Needing something to do, I preoccupied myself with making myself as beautiful as possible. I sorted through the dresses in my closet, choosing a long ivory silk one that had purple flowers delicately painted into the fabric. It fit like a glove. I wanted to wear my hair up, but after looking at the bruises again, I decided to wear it down. I'd been provided with a curling iron and makeup recently, so I worked my hair over carefully, turning the ends up in perfect little curls. Once made up, I stared happily at my reflection, certain Dimitri would be happy too. All I needed now was to put on some of the exquisite jewelry he'd given me. But when I turned to leave, I caught a glimpse of my back from the side and saw I'd missed fastening a clasp. I reached around to do it, but couldn't get a hold of it. It was in that perfect spot just out of my reach. "Damn," I muttered, still grappling with the hook, the flaw in my perfection. Just then, I heard the door open in the other room, followed by the telltale sound of a tray being set on the coffee table. A stroke of luck. "Ina," I called, walking out of the bathroom. "I need you to..." Nausea rolled through me, and as I stepped into the living room, I saw that Dimitri wasn't the source. Nathan was. My jaw dropped open. Ina stood near him, waiting patiently by the tray, eyes downcast as always. I immediately ignored her and then looked back at Nathan. Presumably, he was still on guard duty, but that had never actually included him coming inside. For the first time in a while, some of my battle instincts kicked in, assessing escape options. My fear urged me to back away, but that would trap me in the bathroom. Best to stay where I was. Even if I couldn't leave the room, this gave me the most space to maneuver. "What are you doing here?" I asked, surprised at how calm I sounded.
"Taking care of a problem."
I didn't really need any pointers to figure out the subtext here. I was the problem. Again, I fought the urge to back up. "I've never done anything to you." It was faulty logic to a Strigoi. None of their victims ever did anything to them.
"You exist," he said. "You're taking up space here, wasting everyone's time. You know how to find her, the Dragomir girl. Yet you'll offer nothing remotely useful until Belikov gets off his ass and awakens you. And in the meantime, Galena forces me to waste time watching you and keeps promoting him because he's convinced her that you're going to be some amazing asset to us."
It was an interesting set of grievances.
"So, what are you gonna do?"
In a flash, he stood in front of me. Seeing him so close triggered that memory in my mind's eye. Him biting Dimitri and starting all of this. A spark of anger kindled in me, but didn't do much in the way of development.
I'm getting the information one way or another, he hissed. Tell me where she is.
You know where she is. She's at the school. There was nothing useful in giving up that news. He knew she was there. He knew where the school was.
The look he gave me showed he was not happy about me providing knowledge he already had. Reaching out, he gripped my hair and jerked my head painfully back. Wearing my hair down maybe hadn't been so useful after all.
Where is she going? She won't stay there forever. Is she going to college, the royal court? They must have made plans for her.
I don't know what they are. I've been away for a while.
I don't believe you, he snarled. She's too valuable. Her future would have been planned out a while ago.
If it is, no one shared it with me. I left too soon.
I shrugged by way of answer. Rage filled his eyes, and I swear they grew redder.
You're bonded. You know. Tell me now, and I'll kill you quickly. If you don't, I'll awaken you to get the information, and then I'll kill you. I'll light you up like a bonfire.
You'd kill me once I was one of you?
Foolish question. Strigoi felt no loyalty to each other.
Yes, it'll destroy him. And once Galena sees how unhinged he is, I will return to my original place by your side. Especially after I stamp out the Dragomir line.
The hell you will.
He smiled and touched my face, running his fingers along my neck and the bruises all over it.
Oh, I will. It really will make things easier if you just tell me now. You'll die in ecstasy rather than being burned alive. We'll both enjoy it.
He wrapped his hand delicately around my throat.
You're definitely a problem, but you are beautiful. Especially your throat. I can see why he wants you.
Warring emotions played within me. Logically, I knew this was Nathan. Nathan whom I hated for having turned to Mitri in the first place. Yet my body's need for Strigoi endorphins was raising its head, too. And it barely mattered that it was Nathan. What mattered was that his teeth were only a breath away from my neck, promising that sweet, sweet delirium. And while one hand held my throat, the other ran down my waist, down to the curve of my hip. There had been a sultry edge to Nathan's voice, like he wanted to do more than just bite me. And after so many sexually charged encounters with Dimitri, encounters that never resulted in anything, my body almost didn't care who touched it. I could close my eyes, and it wouldn't matter whose teeth bit into me or whose hands peeled off my clothes. Only the next fix would matter. I could close my eyes and pretend it was Dimitri, lost in it all as Nathan's lips brushed my skin. Except, as some small reasonable part of me recalled, Nathan didn't just want sex and blood. He eventually wanted to kill me. Which was kind of ironic. I'd been dead set, no pun intended, on killing myself when I got here, lest I become a Strigoi. Nathan was offering me that now. Even if he turned me first, he planned on killing me immediately afterward. Either way, I wouldn't have to spend eternity as a Strigoi. I should have welcomed this. But just then, as my body's addiction screamed for his bite and that bliss, I realized something with startling clarity. I didn't want to die. Maybe it was because I'd gone almost a day without a bite, but something small and rebellious woke up in me. I would not let him do this to me. I would not let him go after Dimitri. And I sure as hell wasn't going to let him hunt down Lyssa. Pushing through that endorphin cloud that still hung around me, I summoned up as much willpower as I could. I dug deep, remembering my years of training and all the lessons Dimitri had given me. It was hard to access those memories, and I only touched a few. Still, enough came to spur me to action. I lunged forward and punched Nathan. And accomplished nothing. He didn't budge. Hell, I don't even know if he felt it. The surprise on his face promptly turned to mirth, and he laughed in that horrible way Strigoi did. Cruelly and without any real joy. Then, with the greatest of ease, he slapped me and knocked me across the room. Dimitri had done nearly the same thing when I'd arrived and attacked him. Only I hadn't flown quite as far or had so minuscule an effect on him. I slammed into the back of the couch, and good God did it hurt. A wave of dizziness washed over me,
and I realized the idiocy of fighting someone vastly stronger than me when I'd been losing blood all week. I managed to straighten up and desperately sought my next course of action. Nathan, for his part, seemed in no hurry to respond to my attack. In fact, he was still laughing. Glancing around, I latched onto a truly pitiful course of action. Ina stood near me, moving with a speed that was painfully slow, but better than I expected myself to manage. I reached for her and wrapped my arm around her neck. She yelped in surprise, and I jerked her harder against me. "Get out of here," I said to Nathan. "Get out of here or I'll kill her." He stopped laughing, stared at me for a moment, and then laughed even harder.
"Are you serious? Do you honestly think I couldn't stop you if I wanted? And do you honestly think I care? Go ahead, kill her. There are dozens more just like her."
Yeah, that really shouldn't have been a surprise either, but even I was a bit taken aback by how easily he could throw away a faithful servant's life. Okay, time to go to Plan B. Or maybe it was Plan J. Frankly, I was losing track and none of them were very good anyway. "Ow!" Ina suddenly elbowed me in the stomach. I released her in my surprise. She spun around with a strangled scream and socked me in the face. The blow wasn't as hard as Nathan's had been, but it still knocked me over. I tried to catch a hold of something, anything, as I fell but failed. I hit the floor, my back slamming against the door. I expected her to come right back at me, but instead, she darted across the room and, God help us all, threw herself into a defensive posture in front of Nathan. Before I could fully process the weirdness of her trying to protect someone who was willing to let her die, the door suddenly opened. "Ow!" I said again, as it hit me and pushed me aside. Dimitri swiftly entered. He looked from face to face, and I had no doubt mine showed signs of both Nathan's and Ina's attacks. Dimitri's fists clenched, and he turned toward Nathan. It reminded me of their scuffle in the hallway, all rage and malice and bloodlust. I cringed, bracing myself for another horrible confrontation.
"Don't," warned Nathan, face smug. "You know what Galena said. Touch me and you're out of here."
Dimitri strode across the room and came to stand in front of Nathan, knocking Ina aside like a rag doll.
"It'll be worth facing her wrath, particularly when I tell her you attacked first. Rose certainly bears the marks of it."
"You wouldn't."
He pointed at Ina, who was sitting dazed on the floor from where Dimitri had knocked her over. Despite my own injuries, I began crawling over to her. I had to know if she was all right.
"She'll tell the truth."
Now Dimitri looked smug.
"You really think Galena will believe a human? No. When I tell her how you attacked me and Rose out of jealousy, she'll let me off. The fact that you'll be so easily defeated will be proof of your weakness. I'll slice your head off and get Rose's stake from the vault. With your last breath, you can watch her drive it through your heart."
Holy crap. That was a little worse than Nathan threatening to burn me. Wait, my stake? Nathan's face still bore haughty arrogance, at least to me. But I think Dimitri must have seen something that satisfied him, something that made him think he'd gotten the upper hand. He visibly relaxed, his smirk growing larger.
"Twice," Dimitri said softly. "Twice I've let you go. Next time you're gone."
I reached Ina and gently held out my hand. "Are you okay?" I murmured. With a look of hate, she recoiled and scooted away. Nathan's eyes fell on me, and he began backing toward the door.
"No," he said. "Twice I've let her live. Next time, she's gone. I'm the one in control here, not you."
Nathan opened the door, and Ina stood up, stumbling after him. I stared, mouth agape at the events that had just taken place. I didn't know which of them I found more disturbing. Looking up at Dimitri, I grappled with what to ask him first. What were we going to do? Why had Ina defended Nathan?
Why had Dimitri let him go?
None of those defiant questions came to my lips, though. Instead, I burst into tears. Chapter 22. I didn't cry very often, and I hated it when I did. The last time I'd done it around Dimitri, his arms had immediately encircled me. This time, all I got was a look of coldness and anger.
"This is your fault,"
he yelled, fists clenched. I cringed backward, eyes wide. But he attacked me.